This is the Ed Milet Show.
Welcome back to Max Out, everybody. It's Ed Milet. I'm so excited about today's show because we're going to talk about all kinds of different stuff, but primarily today, we're going to focus on your health, on your wellness, on you getting lean and clean. And the man to my right looks very familiar to you. For those of you that are watching this on the YouTube version, he's a New York Times best-selling author of like a bazillion different books. And if our off-camera conversation is, if our on-camera conversation is anywhere near as good as the off-camera, today's going to be magic. So this is Dr. Ian Smith. Thanks for being here.
I appreciate you having me.
It's going to be awesome. So we could go everywhere.
Anywhere you want.
Because you've written about so many different things. His newest book, by the way, is Clean and Lean. And I got to tell you, probably the number one question that I'm getting asked from my audience regularly is, what do I know about intermittent fasting? Okay, which is absolutely nothing. And so,
you know why guys are asking that?
Why?
Yeah. Because how good you look.
Oh, thank you.
No. Seriously.
Thank you.
You're a very fit. I looked at you're a very fit looking guy, and people know that IF is something that people who are into fitness, that they know that kind of stuff. They're assuming that, you know, and it's not difficult to explain right now, but you look like a guy who would be a master of that kind of concept.
Thank you, and I'm not. And by the way, this is coming. If we're on YouTube, this is a 50-year-old man. Probably the most shocking thing was that. I swear, I'm looking at your stuff. I'm like, he's 50? Yeah. I look 20 years older than this man.
Blacks on crack.
Is that what it is?
Yes, yeah,
no, I don't have any of that going for me, unfortunately. So I'm assuming some of it, though, is because you're such a fascinating man from where you grew up to your education, and we're going to go there in a little bit. But if I don't get to intermittent fasting first, people are going to be really frustrated with me. So tell me a little bit about it. There's really two types also from what I was reading, right? Yeah. What can you tell us about it?
Let's say what intermittent fasting is.
Okay.
It's not starvation. Okay. People see the word fasting and they think that they're not going to eat for a long time.
Right.
It's intermittent, which means on and off fasting. So on and off eating. So basically you have two windows. You have a feeding window or an eating window. You will eat from this hour to this hour, all of your meals and snacks, and that's the only time you'll eat. Then you have what's called your fasting window. And this is why intermittent fasting works for a lot of things. It works because your body needs energy all day while you're sleeping, while you're talking, taking a shower, whatever, having sex. You need energy, okay? Mm-hmm. Your body typically will get the energy from the food that you eat, the calories.
Okay.
And your body stores calories in the form of glycogen, which is a glucose storage form, and fat. Okay. Fat is a storage form of energy. So when your body needs energy, it takes it from those calories you just ate or you ate a couple hours ago, or it takes it from your stores.
Okay.
If you aren't taking in fresh calories, your body still needs energy. So it says, where am I gonna go to get this energy? Well, the first thing it does, it goes into your liver and your muscles and takes out the glycogen. So it depletes those stores, the inventory, it knocks them all out.
Okay.
Now where do you go? You go to your fat. The body breaks down the fat, converts it to energy, and then you use it to do what you have to do. Now, you don't know this is happening, by the way. This is happening obviously microscopically internally, but this is what fasting does. Fasting drives your body away from food energy into fat energy, melts the fat per se, and then you use it.
Okay.
So intermittent fasting has to work in the sense of you have to be very rigid about your times.
All right.
This is what I mean. If you have a feeding window, you have to stick to it. If you extend your feeding window into your fasting window, you're going to interrupt that fasting period. It's during that fasting period, during that period where you don't have energy, that your body's driving to your fat stores.
Okay.
Now, people say, well, what can I have during my fast? In my way, you can only have about 25 to 50 calories of a beverage. So maybe coffee. If you want to have some coffee or black coffee or some herbal tea.
Okay.
If the calorie count goes above about 50 calories, then you're gonna switch from burning fat to going to the calories you're consuming.
Wow.
And we wanna keep the body, the switch, we wanna keep it into the fat direction.
Okay.
And that's why you don't what's called break the fast.
Okay.
So in my programs, and the last one, Clean and Lean, it's about clean eating with intermittent fasting.
Yep.
So how would you do it? Let's say, for example, you wanna do a 12-hour fasting window.
Okay.
That means you're going to eat for 12 hours and fast for 12 hours. First, by the way, 12 hours is a long time to eat. I mean, it's a lot of time, you know. So,
do you believe it's a long time not to eat or a long time to eat?
I think it's a long time to eat,
okay.
12 hours.
Okay,
because
you could be sleeping potentially 8 of the other 12.
See, now there you go. So you got it already. So people say, but 12-hour fasting, guess what? If you slept for about 8 hours, That means just 2 hours before and 2 hours afterward that you're not eating. Okay. It's 4 hours, really.
Okay.
Now, this is what you would do. This is what I think is the easiest way to do it. If you get up at 8 o'clock in the morning, don't start eating till 10. Do everything you normally do from 8 to 10. At 10 o'clock, start your feeding window.
Okay.
From 10 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night could be your feeding window,
yes.
your eating window.
Yes.
Okay? And then at 10 at night, you fast.
Okay.
Wrap around. That's a 12-12 window.
Okay.
You can burn a lot of fat
okay.
in that 12-hour fasting window.
Do you... We're gonna go to lean in a minute.
Yeah.
The reason this, what's unique about your book, one is the detailed explanation of why intermittent fasting works. But most of my friends who do intermittent fasting are like, it's great because once I'm in that feeding window, I can eat all the crap I want to eat.
That's
what most people say, right?
Like
I've had friends who have lost weight doing it that way, but you've sort of combined clean eating with the fasting. This is really important because people do say to me often, you must eat really clean. And I usually respond, yeah, but I'm not really sure that I know what the clean part of that means. So what is, and I want to stay on the fasting, but I also am just curious about this, like what by definition is clean eating for you?
Yes, clean eating means reducing the amount of processed foods or ingredients that you're consuming. It doesn't necessarily mean total elimination. It's
okay.
difficult to not eat anything processed for a long period of time, right?
Yeah.
You can go a couple days, but it's almost very difficult. But processed ingredients, things that have been processed by manufacturers that started like this, and they add synthetic chemicals, preservatives, all these additives into the food, and you see this on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
This process here, this thing here is called processing the food. And then you see the finished product. Things like chips or Pop-Tarts, all these things that do not look like how they came out of the ground or off the tree or walking around in the pasture, right?
Okay.
Now, to some degree, you're gonna have to do some processing, but it's the addition of all these synthetic chemicals. And by the way, I wish we had like a package of something to look at.
Mm.
You turn the back of a label of a food item, packaged item, and read what's in there.
Okay.
If it has more than 5 to 7 ingredients, it is highly unlikely that it's a clean food.
Okay, so 5 to 7
five
ingredients
to seven.
Is probably processed.
There's some processed in there.
Mm.
That's the way it is.
Okay.
Because you can't have like 15, clean ingredients in one food. It just doesn't work that way.
Okay.
All the other stuff is, xanthan gum, blah, 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 blah. You name it, right? Things you can't pronounce, I don't even know what they are.
Why is it bad for you, though? I hear this all the time, like, you don't want stuff with a bunch of preservatives in it. Why is that necessarily bad for your body?
A couple things. First of all, it can, we think that it can have a deleterious effect on your hormones, okay?
Mm.
So these synthetic ingredients can disrupt your body's hormones and throw your hormones in a state of just panic, actually.
Okay.
So that's one reason. The other reason is that we believe that some of these synthetic sweeteners, for example, that some of these things actually can mess with your brain chemistries, right? Artificial sweeteners are 100 to 200 times sweeter than regular cane sugar.
Hmm.
Sweeter.
Hmm.
And so what happens is when you consume these artificial sweeteners, you have this dopamine response in your brain, which is pleasure.
Yeah.
Right? It's the pleasure reward pathway. So you eat all this sugar, your brain releases dopamine, the dopamine travels in your brain, it goes to your pleasure center and says, ooh, I feel good.
Mm.
So you know what I'm gonna do?
Again.
I'm gonna get more.
Yep, again.
Right? Because it's like Pavlov's dog, right?
Yes.
So we keep going, it's a conditioned response. We keep going to it. So what happens is this, when you eat these synthetic sugars, particularly where I'm right now, when you eat these sugars, you crave more sugar.
Okay.
And more and more and more. And eventually, you know what you're going to do?
Hmm.
You're going to get regular cane sugar.
Yeah.
And you're going to consume it like crazy.
Do these, thank you for this, by the way, for my own edification. But,
sure.
So do these processed sugars have the same inflammatory effects in your body that you read about traditional sugars having?
Great question.
Yeah.
The answer is they're not 100% sure.
Okay.
So. Even though artificial sugars have been around for a very long time, and at least since I was a kid, I mean, my mother used to eat like Sweet and Low and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So way before then, they have not done a lot of real good studies that really looks at the physiological impact. When I say physiological, I mean how the body operates internally. They haven't done really, really great studies.
Okay.
Some of it's political, by the way, because some people don't want you to do those studies, right?
Right?
Okay.
Right,
it's a big business, right?
Right.
But some of it is just that researchers in general kind of have not, they haven't gone hard into it
to really
look at it. Now more studies are coming out saying, we have lab rat studies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have rat studies that show higher rates of cancer in some cases and things like that. But, you know, then again, the argument against that is that what happens in the lab doesn't always transfer to human beings. Okay. We're much more complicated than a lab animal. So we kind of extrapolate what could be happening in us.
But most people would say, why take the risk, right? I mean, is it? Do you think to some extent that this is economically driven, meaning that I've had people tell me, I want you to correct it if it's not true. It's sort of more expensive to eat cleaner. Is that a fallacy?
It's not a fallacy, but it's not as expensive as people think it is.
Okay.
Right? So let me go back to the sugar, for example. Yeah. So I believe that the economics help drive why manufacturers put all this junk into food.
Mm.
Because the synthetic preservatives make the food more shelf stable.
Yes.
They can stay on the shelf longer before they spoil.
Yep.
And therefore, a retailer can buy it and you can be on a Target shelf for 6 weeks, 8 weeks and be okay to give, you know, customers time to buy it, and the retailer doesn't lose money. So a big part of it is financial. The other part of it is that it's cheaper.
Right.
I mean, junk is cheaper. It's junk.
Yep.
You know, like, excuse the expression, but a junky car is not going to cost what it costs to buy a brand new Mercedes.
Correct. Yeah.
So manufacturers are putting junk into foods because it's cheaper to put junk into foods rather than keep the food whole and to farm it in a whole way, organic way. It doesn't have to be organic. It's a whole other conversation. But to farm it in a way where you're not putting all these pesticides and antibiotics and hormones in it, it's more difficult.
I never heard anybody talk about the hormone effect. That's really, really compelling. And I wonder, I'm not kidding. I do look at a dude like you and I'm like, I wonder if this guy's, for his age, got more growth hormone and testosterone still in his body because he's eating cleaner. I don't know. I wonder.
Well, like you said, people ask you if you eat clean. Mm. I don't eat perfectly. In all of my books, the first thing I tell people is, I'm never going to ask you to eat perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, let's be realistic. I'm not perfect. I mean, I had Fatburger yesterday.
You did.
I love Fatburger.
Me too.
It's one of my joints.
Me too.
And so I'll have a burger. Now, do I have Fatburger? I have it maybe once every couple months or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have it. I'm going to have, when I go to New York, I'm going to have a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
It's a New York slice.
That's so good to hear, by the way. Like, I think people need to hear that because I think I have this thing that I teach in my stuff too, that if whatever you're going to begin to do is not something you can maintain, you know, someone hasn't worked out in 2 years, you're like, I'm gonna train for 2.5 hours. I'm like, no, go for 30 minutes, get a workout in, am I right?
So
it's so important that you're hearing what Dr. Smith is saying, that it's gotta be something you can maintain. You can have a piece of pizza, right? You can have a piece of cake, okay. I do too, I want everybody to know that.
Yes, on my Instagram page, go to my Instagram page, at Dr. Ian Smith, spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith. You'll see, I'll post pizza, I'll post, like, for example, I'll post at the Chicago Bulls game, I'll have like a rainbow cake. Now, how often do I have it? The cake is this big.
Right.
But I'm gonna eat maybe.
That's what I do.
Yeah, like 3 or 4, and I'm good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
I don't deprive myself, I'm good. And I'll post it to let people know, listen, how can you live life?
Right.
People say, I don't eat carbs. What are you talking about?
Of course you do.
Right. And by the way, the number one fuel source for your brain is glucose, is carbs.
Okay.
You need carbs more than any macronutrient. Fat, protein, carbs, you need carbs the most because it's fuel source for the body. Now, the issue is the right carbs.
Okay.
Right? So when people come to me and say, oh, I'm following a no-carb diet, I look at them like, why? Because you read it in People magazine?
So your energy level is zip all the time, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
What do marathon runners do the night before a marathon?
Carb up.
They carb
exactly,
up.
Exactly. Right?
You need carbs. Yep. So my whole point is that I think that people have to have a better understanding, you know, when they're trying to do better. And people want to do better, by the way.
Sure.
One thing I was in a meeting yesterday, I said to the guy, I don't think people who make decisions at the top of the food chain understand that the guys at the bottom, they really want to do better.
Yes.
Some of them don't know how to do better.
So
they may lack a little willpower. But who walks around and says, I want to be 400 pounds overweight and I can't tie my shoes, I can't walk up steps without getting winning? Nobody. No one wants to live like that.
I totally agree with you. Right. Now, you said something on fat, so I got to ask you just, and then your opinion on it. I got a couple more questions on it. I'm curious because I get asked this one a lot too. Like, real opinion on someone who eats the keto type plan. Let's just hear it. I want to know your opinion on it.
No way.
Okay.
Keto is, first of all, not a new program. Okay. It's Atkins repackaged.
Okay.
This program's been around for a long time. The high protein, high fat diet is as old as my mother.
Okay.
Right? Sorry, Mom. But it's old, okay?
Right.
And the thing is this. This is why keto works. Okay, I want people to understand this. Keto works almost similar to intermittent fasting. Keto works because instead of consuming carbs, which your body prefers, I just said it's the number one fuel source for your body. Instead of consuming carbs, you consume fats. Fats are a form of energy. Mm-hmm. And so you eat high protein, high fat foods, you turn those fats that you eat and the fat already in your body, you turn it into something called a ketone body.
Mm-hmm.
That process is called ketosis.
Ketosis.
Taking fat to ketone is called ketosis. Ketone then becomes your energy source.
Okay.
Okay. So does keto work? Absolutely, it works. Mm-hmm. Is it sustainable? Absolutely not.
Okay.
Because in keto, you are making your body go into an artificial biochemical state.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute you eat off the keto plan, mm-hmm. you switch from ketosis to regular, and then all that weight comes back.
Okay.
So yeah.
This is the cycle I see with most of these sort of eating plans or workout plans, if it's anything, your business plan, your phone call plan, your work habits, when you wake up, if it's not sustainable, it's not something you should be doing. That's, for me, anything that I'm approached with that's new that I'm gonna try to do and implement in my life has to be something that would be a lifestyle for me going forward, not some little window. It's not that I don't do little blitzes or fixes or different
Everyone
trainings.
Does. Yes.
But when it comes to my eating, this is something I know I'm going to be required to do the rest of my life. I want it to be something I can plan on doing forever.
It's the 70-30 rule. Mm. If 70% of the time you can make good decisions,
yeah.
right? This is life in general.
Yeah.
If 70% of the time, and 30% of the time, you know, it may not be the best decision. I mean, you don't want to be suicidal about a decision,
sure.
right? But if 70% of the time you can make a decision that makes sense, that's well thought out, that's thorough, you're sitting down, you're at a restaurant, you sit there and you say, well, it's not the greatest restaurants, but they do have a salad, but I want some fries. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have a salad and some fries.
Yeah.
But don't do like fries and then, you know, a big, huge steak and then a big dessert that's 600, 700 calories.
You know, you would think that people know what you're saying, but I'm going to tell you, I do exactly that. Like sometimes I'll go eat clean,
mm-hmm.
but I'll do that. I'm like, all right, I'm going to eat these fries, but I'm going to have a salad with it. Like I actually do. I kind of make a negotiation with myself.
Yeah, that's
that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I do the same exact thing.
Or if I know, for example, that like I like ribeyes. I love ribeyes. And in fact, when I go do ribeyes, I get the most marbleized, which is fatty.
Yeah.
I get the most marbleized piece of meat, and because that's the best ribeye, right?
Yeah.
But
I eat greens with it. That's what I do.
Right. But I make sure I have good vegetables.
Yes,
steamed vegetables with it.
That's
right?
Exactly what I do.
You know, I don't do a ribeye and fries.
That's crazy. Me too. People think I'm nuts. They're like, so you're eating this whole ribeye, but you won't get some mashed potatoes? I'm like, nope. I'm eating greens with it. I do the same thing. So prove this works, by the way. Do you still run your Facebook group? Still very prominent, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
So everyone, I just want you to hear this because I like data. Y'all know I'm a little bit nuts about this stuff, but like this isn't really up for debate. This isn't theory any longer. This is statistically, mathematically been proven. So you have a Facebook group. I want them to be able to get in it and then tell them what's sort of like the average weight loss or transformation that's happening that you see in the first little window of time.
Yeah, so, and let me give you some context. People say, what is good weight loss? Let's discuss that first, okay, if we can. Good weight loss, if you could lose on average 1 to 2 pounds a week, that is, any real nutritionist would be like, oh my goodness,
yes.
that is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, people are so habituated into thinking that you need to lose all this weight mm-hmm. in a month.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, it took you 3 years to put on 30 pounds. You
right.
want to lose it in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's dangerous, by the way, for most people because the way they do it, not that losing weight so fast is necessarily dangerous, but it's how you do it.
Okay.
Lemonade diets, cayenne pepper, apple cider vinegar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No. So 1 to 2 pounds a day, a week, is a great weight loss. Now, in my program, I'll admit, it's rapid weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So people typically lose in 30 days between 12 and 15 pounds.
And by the way, I knew that, and these aren't people who are always 300 pounds.
Story
about a 150-pound woman, 30 days, lost like 15 pounds, right?
100%.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why they're doing it. They're doing it because they are making lifestyle changes,
yeah.
And they're not starving themselves. Mm-hmm. They're just eating food that don't have all those processed ingredients.
Okay.
They're not drinking as much soda.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's not neuroscience. You know, soda is if there's one thing I could eliminate from diets, is soda.
Even diet soda?
Diet soda. Okay. It's all junk.
Okay.
You're stuffing all this junk into the best machine ever built is our body.
Yeah.
And you're just killing it, right? Okay. And so people lose all that weight, and I also get them moving. And like you said, I don't say go work out for 2 hours.
Right.
Take 30 minutes, and guess what? Break 30 minutes up. Mm. Do 15 in the morning, 15 at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because the minutes count, not how much you're in the gym. It counts that you're doing that, the exercise, the exertion of energy.
Okay.
People say, oh, I worked out for an hour today. Oh, you know. You spent 25 minutes on the phone or talking to other people in the gym.
Yeah, right,
you
exactly.
For an hour.
I see this all the time.
You see it all the time,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
I see guys in between sets. Mm. I'm like, and you know, I'm very focused in the gym. Because first of all, I like to be efficient.
Me too.
I like to do my work and get out. I don't need it for social hour,
yeah,
right? I'm not picking up girls or anything like that. Like, I'm in the gym to work out. So you'll see guys in between sets. They're like taking 10 minutes between sets.
I know.
What are these guys doing?
I know. I don't understand that. And by the way, that guy looks exactly the same the next year when I see him at the gym. There's been no change in their body at all. Like, dude, you come in here, you might as well hit it hard and get out of here. The idea is to change your body. You know what I'm
you
saying?
Are
the same,
so right.
It's the same thing.
I was training a guy once, and I said to the guy, so this guy and I have been working, this older guy, we've been working for like 6 months, mm-hmm. and I was, you know, working with the gym. And there's another guy who we saw every single day that we went. So we didn't go every day, so he probably was there.
Yes.
And I said to the guy I was training, I said, look at this guy. Mm-hmm. He's doing it all wrong. Mm-hmm. And even my client said, wow. He looks the same he's looked for over a year.
Right,
yeah,
right.
He doesn't change.
Yeah, and by the way, you become unconscious, guys, in what you're doing. Like, even as you're listening to this, maybe your workout needs some evolution and some mix-up. Maybe the way you're eating does need to change. Okay, two more questions on this, then I got to ask you stuff that I'm, like, dying to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there an exception to this? Meaning, a lot of people that follow me are, some of them are bodybuilders.
Yep.
Some of them are, though, really intense about their training, really
yes.
intense about their lifting. Right? And so I'm wondering if you look excited to answer this question.
Well, because you're asking all the questions that are really good questions, and I get these questions. Like, you're asking the right questions, but go ahead, why don't you finish
okay.
the question.
So, is there an exception for someone who's a heavy trainer physically, let's just say with weights?
100% there is.
Okay.
And this is why, by the way.
Okay.
If you are a person who lifts a lot of free weights, resistance training, and you're trying to build muscle, hypertrophy, make your muscle larger, versus lean muscle,
mm-hmm.
okay? If you're trying to build bulk muscle, then you need a lot of protein
mm-hmm.
and you need a lot of calories.
Okay.
You need to, because what people don't realize is this, and this is why I tell women to lift weights also, by the way, not to build big muscles, but muscles are the most metabolically active tissue in the body. By that I mean this, muscles need to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And they're like a growing child. The mm-hmm. bigger your kid gets, the more they eat. The more they eat. That's what muscle is. The bigger your muscle is, the more you need to feed it.
Okay.
That means all the calories you're eating goes into your muscle.
Okay.
Why do men lose weight faster than women? Not because men work harder, not because they're better. They have more muscle mass.
Got it.
And so if you have a man and a woman who are both 175 pounds and they are eating the same thing, the man is going to lose weight faster
okay.
or not gain as much weight
okay.
because a lot of his calories are going to feed his muscle.
Okay.
And the woman mostly has adipose tissue or fat.
Okay.
Now, that being said, so if you are a bodybuilder, a marathon runner, a vigorous exerciser, you need more calories.
Mm-hmm.
You need more protein. So in my programs, I will say, people hit me on Instagram or Facebook and say, Dr. Ian, I do this, what should I do? I said, listen, you gotta eat more. You gotta increase about at least 30%.
Wonderful.
Because your demands are greater.
Okay.
Now here's the other part of it. When you're doing intermittent fasting, it cuts you, right?
Okay.
It can cut you very well. So you gotta be careful. For those who are not bodybuilders, I say, do your workout during your fasting time. Because let's think about this, right?
Yeah.
If fasting works because your body does not have calorie energy, and your body needs energy, we're going to go into the fat stores even harder because we have nothing, no risk of the energy.
Yeah.
So working out during your fasting window is a great way to really
awesome
cut.
Awesome advice.
Right?
Yes.
But if you are doing a two-hour workout, you're doing a huge HIIT workout, don't do it then because you don't have enough energy on board to get through the workout.
Yep.
You could hurt yourself.
This is so good. And by the way, I'm a big fasted cardio person too, but I am going to go through this phase of adjusting. I can very easily not eat the last 2 hours before I go to bed at night. That's not a challenge.
That's not a challenge.
Not a challenge to wait a couple hours when I wake up.
And that's why I say start that way.
Yeah.
People who are a little nervous, this is what you do. And my program's on Instagram. So if you follow me on Instagram, I do all these challenges, like a 7-day soup challenge, 3-day weekend challenge. So if you follow me, I'll say to you, do not eat your last meal within 2 hours of going to sleep.
Okay. Okay.
2 hours.
Okay.
Because from the time, let's say you go to sleep at 10, after 8 o'clock, we're not going to eat. Because all those calories you just put in for dinner, we need to give our body enough time to burn as many of them off before we lay down. Because when you lay down, your metabolic rate drops to almost nothing, relatively speaking. Yeah. And so all those calories have to go somewhere.
Okay.
Where do excess calories go that you don't burn?
Fat.
They become fat.
Right, right.
So people are messing themselves up.
Okay.
They do pretty well during the day.
Yep. They blow it the last 2 hours.
Or they eat a huge meal.
Yeah.
You know, you eat like a 1,500 calorie dinner.
Okay.
And then you're asleep an hour and a half. You got 1,500 calories.
Plus, you're also digesting that food, right?
Absolutely.
While you're sleeping. Yeah. Yeah.
So your body says, what am I going to do with this stuff?
Okay.
Because Newton said, energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Very good.
It's got to go somewhere. So your body says, okay, we got it. We turn into fat.
This is so good. All right, real quick, last thing.
Okay.
On that. Water, which you're about to drink.
Yes.
Perfect. Like, I don't know how you knew I was going to do that. How important is drinking water in one's nutrition? I find, like a lot of people say, hey, I lost 7 pounds the first week on whatever. I'm like, you dehydrated yourself. You lost 5 pounds of or 6 pounds of water, right? And 1 pound of fat.
Absolutely.
So how important, I just want to make sure that people know they need to be hydrated and how you feel about that.
So here's a quick story. When I was in med school, I asked our kidney professor, physiology. So this guy was an expert, he wrote the book. Heinz Valton. Okay. He wrote the book on how the kidney works. And I said to him, Dr. Valton, how many glasses of water are you really supposed to drink? Mm-hmm. He says, Smith, I'm going to tell you something. He said, the number 8 glasses was made up. I was like, what? He's like, yes, that number was made up. We didn't know that was really 8. Someone just said, you should drink 8 glasses of water a day.
Really? Okay.
Then they backed into the number. And what they realized is the amount of water you should drink is the amount to replace your water loss during the day.
Okay.
The average person probably loses, average, not someone who's training a lot, the average person probably loses between 6 to 8 glasses worth, cups worth, 8 ounces per cup of water a day.
Okay.
So you gotta replace that. Your body is 70% water,
okay,
at least. And what people don't realize is just because you're not sweating doesn't mean you're not losing water.
Right. Okay.
You lose water when you're breathing. It comes to your skin, you don't realize it. You obviously eliminate it, you know, urinate it. So you're losing water all day long, by the way.
Okay.
And so people are dehydrated and don't realize it.
Okay.
So I say the average person probably needs between 6 and 9 cups of water a day.
Okay.
The more active you are, the more water you need. And by the way, here's a trick to lose weight with water. On all my programs, I say, before eating a meal, you have to drink 8 ounces of water before you take the first bite.
Okay.
Why is that?
More full.
That's right.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Your stomach works on expansion. So your stomach is like this, collapsed when there's nothing in it. And inside the wall of your stomach are stretch receptors.
Okay.
And those receptors send a signal to your brain when they get really stretched. So if you start, like my fists are closed here, if you start like this and you consume some water, you're like this. You have less room now for the stomach to expand with food because you've taken some up with water.
Very good.
So a quick tip is before every meal, right?
Yes.
Drink 1 cup of water.
I love this. All right. By the way, I've done a lot of shows. I guarantee you the most detailed, most note-taking, most tactical stuff we've covered so far. I guarantee that. So now we get to indulge me because I'm just fascinated by this.
Okay.
I'm not as educated a man as you are.
Stop.
So there's Harvard and Dartmouth on this man's resume. And he has a book. So he's written so many bestsellers, but I think The Ancient Nine is the most unique one. So guys, I just feel like this is such a peek into a world that I never got access to, that probably the vast majority of people have not. But can you tell us about, it's a novel, by the way.
Yes.
And I love this. So tell us a little bit about The Ancient Nine. This is almost like learning about, I guess I would call it almost like a secret society to some extent.
It is.
And you encountered at Harvard. So
yes.
Tell us about The Ancient Nine, the book, and then what all that world is about, if you could. This is going to be, guys, this is something you've never heard before.
So most of you. Real fast. So I went to Harvard undergrad. Mm. I'm a kid from the other side of the tracks. I didn't grow up with wealth. We didn't have any money. I wasn't a legacy, which means I didn't have people who had gone to Harvard. You know, I came from a working class family. So, but I was a very smart kid, and I worked very hard. You know, kids who keep their head on straight, who are poor, they're hungry.
Yes.
You know, I was a poor kid. I was hungry to do better. Mm. And I knew as a kid the best way to get ahead was to do well in school. Mm. That was my out, you know.
Your parents emphasize that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So I always say we were not rich in materials. We were rich in love and education. Because my mother, I didn't have a dad, just my mother. My mother would say, you got to do well in school. And I was a great sportsman too. So I did both. Played sports and I did well in school. And I was very competitive. Anyway, I get into Harvard. My brother and I have a twin brother. We get into Harvard. And
both of you got into Harvard?
Both of us got in.
From a single mother?
Single mother.
Awesome.
Working class mom. Yeah. Uh-oh. I don't know if you can do that these days. It's so hard, but anyway.
Spectacular. Well, I guess you did it. Wow.
Yeah, I credit her. But so we get into Harvard. We go to the school that is just, you know, the who's who,
yeah,
the family names, Kennedys,
yeah,
you know, kings and queens and whatever. So we go to the school, and what happened was, I didn't know anything about Harvard. Like, I didn't know, like, the history of Harvard. Jeez, I was a basketball player, you know, from a small town in Connecticut. Get to Harvard, and one night, one morning I wake up, and someone has slipped under my door an envelope with my name on it and the room number on it. There's no stamp, there's no return address. So I'm like, I at first thought it was, at Harvard, a lot of like these organizations, like the a cappella singers and all these different groups. Okay. It just feels one of these like, you know, nerdy kind of groups that, you know, so I didn't even pay attention to it. I didn't even open it.
Okay.
So I put it on my, like on my table, whatever, in the common room, went about my business. And then one day after dinner, I came home, I was about to throw away, I just opened it up. And it said, the president and members of the Delphic Club cordially invite you to a cocktail party, had the address, and call with regrets and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, what is a cocktail party? I had no idea what a cocktail party was.
Okay.
My people didn't go to cocktail parties. So I was like, oh, this okay, this must be one of these organizations, that these really snooty, highfalutin organizations. One thing I noticed about like rich kids, and I'm not teasing, if you're rich, I'm not teasing you, but rich kids kind of like, they imitate their parents. Mm. Like they're more advanced, like they act like, you know, older.
True.
Right? I mean,
I agree with
you.
They
do everything faster than the average kid.
Sure.
So I know what a cocktail party was. So I put the envelope to the side of the invite. I'm in basketball practice one night. We're in the locker room. And we're taking a shower, the guys are talking, and they're like talking about these clubs. And they're saying, the upperclassmen are saying, I was only a sophomore, but the juniors and seniors said, yeah, it's punch season. So I'm listening to these guys, like, yeah, the clubs are starting to invite people to potentially join their clubs.
You know and nothing about this part.
Nothing.
Wow.
Zero.
Okay.
And so I'm like, ooh, that sounds interesting. And then someone mentioned the name. They said Delphic. And I knew that was the name and that invite I had in my room.
Okay.
So I race home on my bike, and I open this thing up, and I had been invited to this secret society. It's called punching. That's the name they use. And for sororities and fraternities, they say rushing.
Yep.
Or, you know, so they rush a fraternity or rush a sorority, I guess. They call it punching. And so I got invited to this cocktail party. So I said, I'm going to go to this thing. Yeah. I was a very curious guy.
Yep.
And so I went to this party, and I got to tell you something. It was like, I wrote in the book. I mean, the book is 80% true. It's based on me as this poor kid who gets invited mysteriously to to join this thing. And I go to this cocktail party in this huge mansion in Cambridge. And, you know, these guys are in these starch blazers and gold buttons and, you know, Rolex watches and smoking cigars. I've never seen this stuff is like a movie to me.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. It's to me.
Yeah. So anyway, to end it, I end up, you got to go round to round to round. So there are events. First, there's a cocktail party, then there's a dinner. And after each round, they cut the list. So they start about 125 guys, and then the members will cut the list to 75, cut it to 50, cut it to blah, blah, until you get to about 15 to 20 guys who they, at the end, invite to actually join the secret society. And they asked me to join. And to this day, I cannot tell you why they would ask a poor kid who had no connections, didn't go to prep school, and they asked me to join. And it was just a great experience. And so I got inside. I don't want to ruin the book for people to read it or listen to it. The audio is great, by the way. The guy who reads it is great. But I want people to read. I become your eyes to go into this very clandestine, very upper crust world of guys who are billionaires and these kids who are flying around. It's more common now, but back in the day, these people had private planes. Yep. I didn't know what a private plane was back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was such a regular, you know, sometimes ignorance really is bliss. Luckily I didn't know all this stuff.
I just think that, by the way, I want everyone to read the book. It is literally like a movie, except it's real.
It got options, by the way, to be a movie.
Yeah, it should
be. It got optioned to be a movie, so knock on wood.
It should be. Yeah. And guys, you could get the movie now. I'm not promoting the book. I'm promoting the book and the audiobook. Like, you all should hear this. And even, like, for me, because I wasn't in that world, it's almost like there kind of is an Illuminati of sorts, right?
You know, I learned, this is what I learned about this world, that the network, let me back up for a second, the have and have nots.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a have-not,
yeah.
Okay? And I still have the sentimentality of a have-not. Mm-hmm. I've been very successful, God has blessed me, I'm very appreciative for that, but I'm also very humbled that I'm just, I'm small compared to the universe. What I learned is that the have-nots have a network and a way of operating that is so removed from the regular life and thinking of us regular mm-hmm. have-nots, the haves have this world, that we don't even know what they're really doing.
Yeah.
There's so many deals behind these closed doors. There's so many people picking up the phone and calling, you know, this guy's dad is a CEO of Morgan Stanley, mm-hmm. and his son wants an internship. He doesn't go the regular route.
Yeah.
He doesn't file an application, yeah. go to interviews. No. Mm-hmm. The dad knows the CEO. They went to school together. They were in the club
yep.
together.
Yep.
It's just, you know, I'm not whining about it because there are a lot of different networks in the world, but you need to be aware that everything is not fair. I mean, you talk about the scandal with the schools, mm-hmm. with Felicity Huffman and... Yep. And Lori Loughlin, I mean, you know, they operate in a different way.
Yeah.
They just do.
Yep.
And I got in, my brother got in, because we just didn't know any other way to get in. You work yeah. hard, right?
Yes.
You get in.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, I always say to my friends, I said, this is where the haves have it wrong. The haves don't realize that the have-nots don't want mansions and cars and stuff. They just want to kind of lead a decent life.
You're right.
And you guys don't give them any room.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You guys hit them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, baggage fees. Mm. You think a baggage fee affects a millionaire? No.
Right, right.
But for a person who's traveling with a family of four, and then they got now paid $25 to $30 for a bag?
You got it.
That makes a big difference to these people.
Huge difference. You know, big difference? Gas taxes, too. There's other ways to tax people than fuel, and that hits poor people. Disproportionately in a huge way.
A huge way.
Where they run out of food at the end of the month because they're paying a tax on gasoline and things like that. So Europe, we think very, very, very similarly. I can already tell. Now, but by the way, I want everybody to know one thing. You can get life momentum. And at different levels of life, life does get a momentum and collaborations do begin to happen, even how you and I met, right? Mm-hmm. It's not some secret society.
That's right.
But we are connected with some very similar That's people right. and it makes life... Getting it off the ground, if you come from that place of have not, is a very difficult place. But there is hope when you get it going because of the collaborations and the meetings and different little organizations you will meet that will afford you progress in your life too.
The two most important things to do that, in my opinion, number one, surround yourself with positive people.
Yeah.
Positive people. If you're surrounding yourself, I didn't say rich people.
Yes.
But people who are positive, mm-hmm. who are optimistic, who want to achieve in life. Surround yourself with them because it's contagious. And the second thing is, above all else, you must always believe in yourself. Mm. Always believe in yourself first. Because sometimes and often you're gonna face situations where no one believes in you.
Right.
And if you allow people's lack of belief in you to dissuade you from believing in yourself, you can't accomplish.
Did that never happen to you? I'm curious, let's be real. You grew up with a single mother, African-American. Yeah. You're now getting into this world where it is not the norm mm-hmm. every single day. You're not mm-hmm. seeing, if you walk into a room of 300 people, there aren't 299 that look like you that come from where you come from.
No way.
So speak to people that relate to that for a second. Did you ever struggle with that? Or was there something your mother did or something internally you had? Your own confidence, your own. I just put a post out yesterday, one of my most responded to posts, and it was about when I started to make progress for me. And obviously I come from a different place than mm-hmm. you, but even me, when I got to that new room, that new place, me going, I don't know if I belong here. I would have these thoughts like, maybe it's a fluke. Maybe I got lucky. Maybe they're gonna figure me out here. Mm. I still have that once in a while. They're gonna figure out who I am, right? And so I know if I had some of that, did you have any of that, or did it just, or are you just wired differently?
Never.
Wow.
I never, ever had a scintilla of thought that I didn't belong. You wanna know why? Because from a little kid, I believed my grandfather when he told me, if you work hard, you can succeed and win. I just believed it. I don't know what made me believe it, by the way. Since I was a little guy, I believed it. And so I always believed that if I did my work on time, I got A's, I didn't get in trouble, didn't mess with people, that good things would happen, and go to church on Sunday, good things were gonna happen to me. So when things started happening, I was very appreciative and respectful of it. But I never felt like I didn't deserve it because I felt like I worked for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really did. I mean, like, geez, my brother and I, we played basketball. We used to go wake up, and this is funny, we used to wake up in the morning and go to our high school and run hills at 5 a.m. to get better.
And then get 4.4 GPA, wherever the heck you were getting.
And while our classmates were sleeping.
You were after it.
Okay, we were after it. 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, up at the hills, we would see the milk guy come deliver the milk in the morning. This is a true story. So I grew up in a way that the fire in me to succeed, because I was accepted even at a young age. I used to talk to old people a lot when I was young.
Me too.
And they would tell me stories. Mm-hmm. And one thing I got from them was that life is really short. And they would always say, geez, I can't believe all these years have gone by so fast. They would always say that. Mm-hmm. And then I would listen to them say what they would do differently. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is one common thing was they would have been more present in the moment.
God, that's true. So true.
Present in the moment.
You, one of my top two or three favorite answers ever, because it was so honest. And I want to say something to you about it, because I did have that struggle where I didn't think I belonged. And my way out, this is on hundreds of tapes and audios, mm-hmm. is verbatim what you just said that you had the whole time. I started to go, wait a minute, I'm doing things no one's willing to do right here. I'm outworking everybody. And what happened was my self-esteem changed because it became a self-worth thing. Self-confidence to me is the process of making and keeping promises to yourself.
Oh, geez.
And I had this reputation right with me over time where I trusted me. And I felt more and more worthy of the rooms I was going into because I wasn't looking at who the other people were in the room. I was looking at me and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm doing everything that Absolutely. Makes me belong in this room. And so you had it all along. I developed it as I got older.
And I never allowed external validation to make me feel worthy, ever, mm. ever. If you didn't want me at your birthday party as a kid, guess what? Mm. I didn't want to be there. Mm. I didn't want to slide through the back door. If you don't want me there, if a girl doesn't want to go out with me, I don't want to go out with you either. I don't want to be in a situation where I got to force myself on you or force a situation. I'm good. I just feel like that has really, and it's helped me, by the way, as I've gotten older. And, you know, listen, no successful person has not had tough
sure.
times and tough moments. We all go through, mm-hmm. right? The public doesn't always see it,
yeah.
but we all have our moments. And one thing that has kept me steady has been me believing in myself and realizing that I've worked hard and my validation is with me.
Oh my gosh.
And that I set the highest standards for myself.
Yeah.
I do. No one has ever had to set a higher standard for me than me.
Yeah, you're special. I gotta say something, everybody. I'm gonna get you one more question here. Everyone that's listening to this right now, please do your colleagues and friends and family a favor and make sure they know to listen to this from the very beginning to the very end. Because there's so much in here. I didn't know we were gonna go down this road at the end.
Sorry.
No. I'm grateful because I want everybody to be doing that because y'all know each other that'll listen to the program. Tell them, I know you started out and they went through some unbelievable stuff on how to get healthier. And then this stuff at the end is bananas. So this is one of these, you listen to the whole darn thing. Last thing I wanna ask you about, just because mm-hmm. I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You got named by President Obama. I want to give it the right name, Council of Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. Yeah. You're the medical contributor on all these different shows. I've watched you on GMA. I've watched you on the Rachel Ray Show, which you're part of. You were on The Doctors. You've been everywhere. I got to think, though, that was one of the coolest things that's happened for you. And did you get a chance at all to interact and work with him? And if you did, what was that like?
Yeah. So, you know, the White House is an amazing place, by the way.
Is it?
It just is. It's the people.
I've been
house.
There on the tour, but yeah, I've been on the part
inside.
You went to.
You know, I think that. Because it's our house, we own it, all of us mm-hmm. own it. I think that we need to do a better job of giving people access, not just to the tour part. Mm. I mean, I don't know how to do it. Maybe there's a lottery system, but some way people need to see the rooms where the work happens. Mm. When work's not happening, like the Oval Office
sure.
and going into the Roosevelt Room and seeing like all the presidents and their pictures and the famous, it's just unbelievable. So to go into like the West Wing, you know, yeah. the West Wing, to actually go into the actual West Wing is really something special.
I'm sure.
I love our country. I love our history, mm-hmm. you know, the good and bad of it, mm-hmm. right? Because no one's perfect. Mm-hmm. We've had some bad moments in our
sure
history,
have.
But I love our country. And I told you before, I travel a lot.
Yeah.
And every time I go away, I was just in Japan. Every time I go away and learn about other cultures and countries, it makes me love my country even more. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like these new places. I sure. love them too, but it makes me appreciate America more. But going into the White House and working with the president, Obama was just, he's just an awesome dude, man. Forget politics. Like, as a man, He was just a cool guy. You know, he had a swagger about him. And, you know, we played ball.
You did?
Oh, yeah, we played ball. I got this great picture at my house where he has his hand on my shoulder. The council is standing there, like, talking to him. And Chris Paul, the basketball player, is standing next to me. And the three of us are kind of in a moment. And I love that picture because it's very candid. Because, you know, they got these photographers that are always going around. And it's just a great moment. But this council was an honor because I got a chance to sit down with my heroes, like people like Billie Jean King, Carl Edwards from NASCAR, the gymnast Dominic Dawes, Michelle Kwan, the skater, the Olympic skater, Grant Hill. It just—
what a great group.
It's unbelievable. Mm. And be able to sit at the table and you're like, geez, like, I'm at the table with these dudes. I count, like, you know, but—
Your life is remarkable. And it's just, you're so young.
Yeah, well, you're as young as you feel.
You're in the middle of it, so you don't have context for it yet, but there's got to be a little part. It happens for me once in a while where I'll actually say something that actually really did happen. Maybe even when it was happening, I was like, and then I say, I'm like, wow, that was, wow.
Well, you know, I'm glad you say that, by the way, and we can close on this. Like, I always say that I like to work in the trenches. I like to work. I like to work. I like to make progress. That's just kind of how I'm wired that way. But every once in a while, I had to teach myself that you have to look up from the trench and see the landscape. Don't take a portrait view, take a landscape view and see kind of where you were, see where you can go. And that kind of guides you in life. And so for me, personally speaking, when someone will say to me, like someone was introducing me, I don't usually listen to my intro. I'm like, oh geez, why are they reading this bio? Like it was on and on. Yeah. But then I was like paying attention for some reason. And like the dude was like, going over my stuff I've done. I was like, wow, I did all that stuff? Like, I was like, honestly, I'm not being arrogant, but I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like,
I don't think you're the least bit arrogant.
No, but I was like, wow, that's the kind of stuff I want to do. I actually did that stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I worked three jobs when I was a young kid. Yeah. Like, when I was young, out of med school, I was working for Time Magazine, for NBC News, and in the hospital as an intern. I did all three. Now, I did that because I didn't know any better.
Incredible.
Right?
Incredible.
I was a young guy. It didn't make. I didn't need to sleep back then.
Yeah.
I was all over New York running and changing in the car like Superman, going to the hospital, going to Time magazine. But anyway, so I just think that I want to say to people who are listening, I just think that people really have to find themselves, right? And to think about. I just said this to my mother driving here. I said, Ma, figure out how you want to live the rest of your life. Just figure that out. Figure out what's important to you.
Yeah.
You know, don't. We're so quick to do things because it's expected of us.
You're right.
It's expected. But no, don't do that. A lot of times in my career, I cut across the grain. I stopped doing medicine for a while. Everyone said, what? What, are you crazy? I was doing orthopedic surgery. I started doing TV. You're doing TV? All the best decisions I've made in my life are decisions that I thought through, that I didn't allow others to overly influence.
Wow.
And I typically cut across the grain. I went in the direction that people said, you probably shouldn't go that way.
What great advice. Yeah, it's obviously.
I mean, you've done it too, obviously.
I have, but it's obviously worked. I just think it's the most incredible advice because I wish you would say some things I could challenge today. Because typically on the show, I'll challenge something.
Next time, I'll.
But next time we'll go. We'll get a little more controversial. Yeah. But first, I want to say something to you. I want to say thank you on behalf of millions of people listening to this. Because the idea of this show is to both teach people things that they didn't know before they started, they can tactically implement.
Sure, absolutely.
Change their thinking to some extent, and then inspire them. Yeah. And like we hit 10s out of 10s on all three of those things today. So I'm immensely grateful for the time today. Everybody, make sure that you're following Dr. Ian Smith on Instagram.
At Dr. Ian Smith, spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith. And if you want to join one of our challenges, we do it on Instagram, but also on Facebook.
Okay.
So they can email me, actually. Can I get that out?
Sure.
My email is abychallenge1@gmail.com. A better you. abychallenge1@gmail.com, and I'll send you registration info on how you get into one of our challenges. But we have a lot of fun, and people get the best results when they have support.
Yeah, totally agree.
Let me tell you something. People are alone, and you don't realize how many people actually have your same problem.
Yeah, so true.
Right?
I want you guys engaging with him. I just thank you. That's all I can tell you.
It was great, man.
Thank you. I enjoyed it so much.
We got to do this again sometime.
I would love to do that again. Your next book, we'll have you on.
Okay, great.
I would love that, which is coming out in
April. Mind Overweight. It's all about the mind.
Okay, so then we got to have you on for that.
Okay.
So, all right, everybody. I know you enjoyed today's program. Reminder, every day on Instagram, the Max Out 2-Minute Drill. I want to engage with you. I want to know what's going on with you. I want to be able to have the right guests, the right content. Dr. Smith was here today directly because of the feedback I get from you guys about you wanting to learn more about intermittent fasting, and I'm so glad we went down these other roads. Max Out 2-Minute Drill means this. When I make a post every day on Instagram, which is usually 7:30 to 8 a.m. Pacific, 10:30 to 11-ish Eastern, you'll have an opportunity to make a comment on my post, and if you make that comment, or you comment on someone's comment on that within the first 2 to 5 minutes, we pick a winner every day. You get coaching calls with me, Ride on the Jet, my book, Max Out Gear, calls with my guests, all kinds of cool stuff. And if you miss the first 2 to 5 minutes, as long as you just comment every day on every post, there's just 5 or 6 a week, if you just do that every single day and stay engaged with me, we pick a winner from that group as well. So I'd love to connect with you more deeply. God bless you and continue to max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.